Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 3rd of November. In just a few moments, Madeline Albright will be joining us. She has just a beautiful new book that's filled with diplomacy and foreign policy, and it all happens through pins. The book is Read My Pins, Stories from a Diplomat's Jewel Box. She'll be with us momentarily. A little bit later, we have a really busy program. Lawrence Korb will be joining us a little bit later today, who now works for the Center for American Progress. Our conversation for that half hour will concern Afghanistan. He served as director of the Center for Public Policy Education and actually as Assistant Secretary of Defense through the years 1981 through 1985, and administered about 70% of the defense budget. What direction in Afghanistan will be the question that we'll be asking him, and that will be coming up the second half hour of our program. And then the second hour of the show, let me get the book while we're waiting for the secretary to call us. Read Me. It's a really interesting book. It's a century of classic American book advertisements. And the author is a book reviewer for the New York Times and has come up with these fascinating book reviews covers that go all the way back to 1900, how books were advertised, how important they are, what authors think about advertising. So that's coming up. Madeleine Albright is joining us now, the 64th Secretary of State of the United States. Before that, she was U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations. She has authored three New York Times bestsellers since leaving office, her autobiography, Madam Secretary, a memoir, The Mighty and the Almighty, Reflections on America, God, and World Affairs, and Memo to the President, How We Can Restore America's Reputation and Leadership. She serves now as the chair of the Albright Stonebridge Group, a global strategy firm. She's a professor in the practice of diplomacy at Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. She chairs both the National Democratic Institute for International Affairs and the Pew Global Attitudes Project, and we're very happy to have her with us. We'll be taking phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Madam Secretary, hello.
Hi, how are you? Hi, Kathleen. Good to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you here. I love this book. It is so beautiful.
Isn't it pretty? It really is.
It is beautiful. Yeah, and the collection of the pins, I understand, are traveling to various parts of the country.
Well, at the moment, they're in New York at the Museum of Arts and Design, but ultimately they're going down to the Clinton Library in Little Rock and then to the Smithsonian, and then we're looking at a few other places.
Very nice. Bring them to Milwaukee. We have a gorgeous art museum.
I know you do. Yeah, with that great roof.
Yes. All right. So you'll put it in the back of your mind and think about that. The piece of jewelry that has meant the most to you then as now was created by Katie, your youngest daughter. She's so artistic. It's a beautiful pin, and you still wear it.
Well, I do, and she's very funny because I wear it always on Valentine's Day, and people will say, well, how old is she? And, you know, she's been 25, 30, 35, 40. And she said, Mom, you've got to tell them I did it when I was 5.
She needs to make you a new one, don't you think?
I do think so. I think she might have lost some of that elementary school talent.
Yeah, it's nice. But you talk about how pins in that section of the book reflects one of the indispensable purposes of jewelry, and that it binds families together.
It does. And, you know, I think the thing that is usually it's older people giving pins to their children or grandchildren, and the part about Katie's heart is that it went the other direction. But I have a pin that my mother actually had from her sister, and then her sister died, and my mother wore it for a long time, and then she got absolutely terrified that she would lose it, so she didn't wear it. And, of course, I haven't worn it. There's certain pins you're just irreplaceable, so you actually don't wear them in the end.
Hmm. What was the pin that you were wearing? It was an important occasion, and it was falling off?
Oh, well, that has a long story. What happened was that I went sometime at the end of 1996, my name started appearing as a potential Secretary of State, and I went to a shop, and they had, in fact, this incredible eagle, and they said, we got this for you. And I thought, well, you know, I think that it costs too much money. I don't think I'm going to get it. But in the back of my mind, I thought, if I ever, by some miracle, become Secretary of State, I will buy it. So I did. I got it when I was named. And then what happened was I wore it for my swearing in. And I'm standing there with one hand on the Bible and one in the air, and I look over, and the pin is just dangling because it was an antique and I hadn't fastened it right. So after the whole thing of having to have it, I call it my Secretary of State pin, it wasn't even really visible in that picture if you look at it.
Yeah. You were really gutsy in some of the pins that you wore, weren't you? When you think about it, some of these pins made such a statement.
Well, they were a little bit in your face. I mean, yeah. The thing, I'm I went a little far, I think. We were in Russia for the summit with President Clinton and President Putin, and I so disagreed with what the Russians were doing in Chechnya in terms of denying that anything was going on there, that when I have the hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil monkeys, and President Putin said to President Clinton, well, we noticed what Secretary of State Albright is wearing, so why are you wearing those monkeys? And so I said, because of your Chechnya policy, and that kind of made him mad. So I think I overstepped on that one.
Yeah. And the in-your-face thing started with Saddam Hussein, isn't that right?
Well, the whole book would not have happened without Saddam Hussein. And so because what happened was when I first started at the United Nations, it was right after the Gulf War, and we had the ceasefire was translated into a series of sanctions resolutions, and they kept coming due one after another. So we talked about Iraq a lot, and my instructions from Washington were to say perfectly horrible things about Saddam Hussein constantly, which he deserved because he'd invaded another country and trashed it. And so all of a sudden a poem appeared in the papers in Baghdad comparing me to many things, but among them an unparalleled serpent. And I happened to have this snake pin. And so after one of the times of dealing with Iraq, you know how the ambassadors come out from the Security Council chamber and greeted by a bunch of reporters? Somebody noticed the pin, and the cameras picked it up and said, why are you wearing that pin? And I said, because Saddam Hussein called me an unparalleled serpent. And then I thought, well, this is fun. So that's how it started. And I went out then and bought all, you know, mostly costume jewelry to kind of reflect what I thought we were going to do.
That's a great answer. This is fun. Yeah, it must have been.
But I have to tell you, I also credit President Bush because he said, read my lips, you know.
Right.
And so what happened, literally, I just opened the mail. I had sent President Bush a copy of the book, and he said, love the title.
I'm sure. Let's talk about North Korea for a moment. I didn't know when you informed me that every North Korean is expected to wear a pin bearing the image of the nation's founder. So you say that pins are crucial, but nowhere on earth are they less decorative.
Absolutely true. And I think that this kind of, you know, there are countries, dictatorships, where in fact people are ordered to wear pins with the face of whoever, Mao or Kim Jong-il. And it really kind of fit into a discussion that I was troubled by during various campaigns when candidate Obama was criticized for not wearing a flag pin. I think that people should have a choice about whether they want to wear a pin or not. They can't be forced into it, and you can't say that somebody who doesn't wear a flag pin is not patriotic and somebody who does is. And so I kind of compared it to a place where you have to do something is different than choosing to wear a flag pin or whatever you want to wear.
So you chose, though, to wear a bold American flag pin when you were meeting with Kim Jong-il.
The biggest one I had, you know, and I'll tell you why. First of all, I think it's a neat pin, and I love wearing flag pins, but I know that their propaganda had put out that the U.S. was a terrible country and responsible for all the things that were wrong there, and yet I knew that if I had a picture taken with him, they would release it publicly. And so how were they going to explain that their dear leader was standing next to somebody with a flag pin that went from shoulder all the way down to the midriff? So you know, I thought it was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's a funny picture, actually.
I think it's one of the best pictures in the book, don't you?
It's very funny, I think.
Yeah, it is funny. You wore heels, so he wore heels.
Well, what happened was that, you know, we about the same height, and I knew I had on heels, and then I looked over, and so did he. And if you notice, his hair's a lot poofier than mine.
Right. Yeah, it is indeed. Sometimes you had some incredibly sad occasions when people had died and you had to honor those bodies, some terrorist activity. What did you do in those instances? What did you wear?
Well, I sometimes wore a flag pin, but I had also, and again, this is costume jewelry. It's a bow that is red, white, and blue that I bought it because I thought it was pretty, and then I found out that it was a pin that was worn primarily as a memorial. And so I would wear that sometimes when we'd go to President Obama's just been to Dover Air Force Base and to receive bodies, and unfortunately I had to do that also on occasion. So, or for instance, when one of our diplomats, Pamela Harriman, died.
Yes.
I wore that, and so it's a memorial pin.
Mm-hmm. I love the shattered glass pin.
Isn't that a great pin?
Yes.
It kind of depicts everything that happened, and it really is nice to have shattered that ceiling. I have to tell you, though, my granddaughter, Katie's daughter, said to her mother, "So what's the big deal about Grandma Maddie being Secretary of State? She just turned 7, and she said, only girls are Secretary of State. So that would be pretty much true for her lifetime.
She calls you Grandma Maddie?
Yep.
Aw, that's nice. That's pretty sweet. Tell me the story behind, it's a very dramatic picture of the, and a beautiful pin, the Atlas pin.
Well, that pin, it's interesting. I found that in Paris, and I thought it was a great pin. I love the way it looks, and it really does depict, in fact, what we were all trying to do is to hold up the world in trying to solve some of the issues that the United States faced and our friends and allies, whether it was on Kosovo or whatever issues we were working on. It kind of is really the responsibilities that come with the job of being Secretary of State or Foreign Minister.
Mm-hmm. The meeting with the Russian Foreign Minister, when you were talking about anti-ballistic missile treaty, you wore, this is a great story, an arrow-shaped geometric pin.
Well, what happened, and the funny part about this is that, you know, as I said, this all started in 93 as just pure fun, and I don't want you to think, or your listeners to think, I'm a complete lunatic, that I had some kind of a strategic plan for this, or that I wake up every morning, you know, desperate to figure out what I'm going to wear. But they did, the either ambassadors or foreign ministers did, in fact, begin to pick up on what was going on.
Sure.
Here. And so we were renegotiating the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, ABM, and the Russian foreign minister looked over and he said, at this pin that's an arrow, and he said, "Is that one of your missile interceptors?" And I said, "Yes, and we make them very small, and it's time to negotiate."
Oh.
But I had fun with the Russians generally, because one of the other things that happened, Kathleen, was that they had, believe it or not, after the Cold War, had placed a listening device, a bug, into one of our conference rooms not far from my office. And we discovered it, and we did go and complain in Moscow. But what happened was I wore this huge bug on my shoulder the next time I met with the Russians. So they got it.
Yeah, they sure did. But you must have to think every day, Madam Secretary, about what pin you're going to wear, because everybody expects it of you.
Well, it does now. And I have to say, it takes more thought than it did before. Partially, most of my pins are now in this exhibit, and I now have a whole series of what I call my pity pins of people that gave me things because they know I don't have mine. And today, I am wearing a frog that turns into a prince, and so I've decided that it goes with what I am talking about and doing in the last couple of days. We just put out a a report on changes in the former communist countries 20 years after the fall of the Berlin Wall. So it signifies the frogs that turned into princes. Hmm. So, but it's fun, and I obviously. But what happens is when I don't wear a pin. For instance, I don't wear a pin now when I travel because getting through security and taking off your jacket and everything, I don't want to break them or lose them. And people come up and say, why aren't you wearing a pin? Or when I'm exercising or at the supermarket or something. So in some ways, I've created a little monster here.
Right. I was going to ask you if you were meeting with Hamid Karzai today, what pin would you wear? And I wonder if you just answered that the pin that you have on, the frog turning into the prince,
well, that
would
one,
be applicable.
Hopefully he will turn into a prince. But I thought today that in some ways what this is about are issues of governance and responding to the will of the people and understanding what institutions are about. And so without saying you have to look exactly like us, I might have worn that picture that I have of the U.S. Capitol that shows the importance of understanding that you have to respond to the people.
Mm-hmm. You must have, and you write about this, received all kinds of pins. Some of them were pretty meaningful gifts.
Well, I think I love the ones from some of the former foreign ministers, and especially, for instance, there's the head of the British Lion that I got from Foreign Secretary Robin Cook. He was a dear friend. He has since died, and I think that one is meaningful, and some of the others. But I do think that the most meaningful one, and it's how the book ends, and since this is not a mystery story, I'm not spoiling the end of the book, is what happened was I went to New Orleans a couple of years ago to speak at the D-Day Museum. And afterwards, there was a dinner, and this young man came up to me, and he said, my father's sitting over there at another table, and he's a veteran, and he was awarded 2 Purple Hearts. And he and my mother were married a long time, and for their 50th wedding anniversary, he gave her a pin, and she died as a result of Katrina. Oh. And we've all decided that you need to have this pin. And I said, I can't possibly. And I opened the box, and there it is. It's a beautiful pin, and it's 2 amethysts. And I said, I can't accept this. And he said, you must. It would be a great honor to us. And so I call it my Katrina pin. And it's another one of those that I don't think I can wear because I'm so afraid that I'll lose it or break it. And it is irreplaceable. And it signifies the kind of bonds that get expressed in different ways.
And moved you to tears when you received it.
Totally. I mean, I had kind of gotten used to never being moved to tears in a public office, but I did, it truly did. And because it signified so many different things.
We're speaking with Madeleine Albright, the 64th Secretary of State of the United States. We have time for a couple phone calls, which we'll take in a moment. The number is 800-486-8655, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have time for a few phone calls for Madam Secretary, and let's go to Janice from La Crosse. Hi, Janice.
Hi, good morning, and good morning, Mrs. Albright. It's just an honor to be able to speak to you, and thank you for all the work that you have done. I thank you a lot. But anyway, what I really wanted to say to you also is that I listened to C-SPAN the other night. The former UN ambassador to Afghanistan, Iraq, and Iran. Anyway, they were talking about the strategy in Afghanistan and how we need to help these people help themselves. That there's just so much poverty there, and I know there's just so much destruction and infrastructure destruction besides. How can we work for peace, Ambassador, please? I just don't want any more war and destruction and violence and killing. It's just depressing.
It's terrible, and the pictures out of Afghanistan are truly awful, and I think that the question is the extent to which we and others of our friends and allies can help. The situation, for instance, for women in Afghanistan, I have called women kind of the canary in the coal mine in terms of the way women are treated as a sign of what happens in society. And I do think that what has to happen here is a certain amount of security has to be created, but ultimately the Afghan military and their police have to take care of it, and outside help can come in terms of reconstruction assistance, but not just from us, from NATO countries, European Union countries, countries in the region. It's a huge tragedy that you look at the ordinary people in Afghanistan and you think that they are just pawns in a very nasty game.
Thank you very much for the call. I am wondering what you think as the president deals with a strategy here for Afghanistan, which seems to be so difficult. What a difficult situation it is for him. If you were advising, and perhaps you have, do you think an increase in troop levels, Madam Secretary, is the answer here? Or we've talked about withdrawal of troops or withdrawal of some troops. What's the road?
Well, I think the following thing. First of all, this is a very long-standing thing, and I know people get tired of hearing that this has all happened in the last 8 years, but it did because we took our eye off the ball and moved it to Iraq. And so President Obama comes in faced with a really, really terribly difficult situation. I personally believe that we cannot withdraw immediately, that it creates a vacuum, and that's part of where the issues arose previously. But also, I do think that President Obama is going about this in the right way in terms of looking at the issues to do with the number of military within a larger context. The political situation has shifted in the last 48 hours in terms of the election being called off and Karzai having been declared the winner. And so that changes some of the calculus. What's going on in Pakistan is unbelievably complicated. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very glad he's taking the time. I personally, and this is my personal view, think that it's not one of those issues between counterinsurgency and counterterrorism, that you have to do a little bit of both, that the troops are necessary there in order to help provide some kind of a secure area that does not allow Al-Qaeda to have safe havens and also allows the people to do exactly what I was talking about with the last caller, and also then have a system also for going after the terrorists. I don't know what the right numbers are. I haven't seen the various aspects of the plans, but I don't think that we can pull out totally, and I don't think we can stay there forever, and I think we need to have a mixture of this counterinsurgency and counterterrorism. But I appreciate the careful way that President Obama is going about making this decision.
Mm-hmm. Secretary Albright, thank you so much for being with us. Please bring the pins to Milwaukee.
I will, and I have to tell you this. What it is foreign policy, which I love to talk about with a spoonful of sugar, so that there really is a way to tell some stories.
Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. The book is Read My Pins, Stories from a Diplomat's Jewel Box. Madeleine Albright is the author of it, and it really is a gorgeous book. You would think that a book of pins wouldn't be gorgeous, but it is beautiful, and a lot of foreign policy stories to be told with each of those pins. She was pretty gutsy in wearing many of them to the meetings that she went to.